Welcome to episode 13 of the Print in a Clan podcast, the podcast where I'll be discussing board and card games that you can print out, put together yourself, and then play with your friends, as well as crafting tips and news related to the hobby. I'm your host, Steve, and in today's episode, The Herald. History suddenly changed on that day when an international panel of astrophysicists announced that radio telescopes around the world had been receiving a non-random pattern of wave signals coming from deep space at regular intervals for 3 months. All the nations in the world joined forces in a gigantic space program under the UN banner, recruiting the brightest minds in all fields and diverting massive amounts of resources towards one goal: to build a spaceship capable of trans-light speed space travel. The program required 24 years to complete, but eventually produced the most incredible piece of technology that humans had ever built: the Space-Time Expansion Contraction Engine, the heart of the first United Nations spaceship, the Herald. The cost, however, had been immense. More than 1 billion people had been pushed into poverty as countries canceled social initiatives and redirected all their efforts with ruthless efficiency to contribute to the program. And right from the start, fear of what could come from this new frontier has caused the formation of an anti-program faction, the isolationists. As more and more was sacrificed by governments on the altar of the program, the isolationists grew stronger and stronger, gaining widespread popularity, media, and finally political support. Now, the UNS Herald is ready to begin her journey to explore space, meet extraterrestrial cultures, broaden human knowledge, and prove that paying such a terrible price to make it possible was not the most tragic mistake in our history. But as the STEC engine begins its complex power-up procedure, many people around the world are silently hoping that the ship never comes back. And you can't stop thinking about the disturbing dispatch you have just received from the UN headquarters. 4 isolationist terrorist cells have managed to infiltrate on board. The Herald is a sci-fi themed solitaire game consisting of just 2 printed sheets and a few extra components to go with it. The first of the 2 sheets, called the Captain's Pad, contains a small grid map for keeping track of the Herald's location, a time track, a reading section to keep track of direction, environment, sabotage, STEC engine, or event settings for each turn, along with a series of trackers to keep track of your diplomatic successes, your research surveys, the number of isolationists still on board, your current leadership level, and the current supplies level. The second page, called the Event Pad, keeps track of your 8 crew members, their statistics as far as how good they are at various skills, and their current effectiveness rating, along with 24 events that may randomly come up during the course of the game depending on various die rolls. Along with those 2 pages, you also need 23 markers. The designer suggests cubes, but really just about any small marker will work. I personally used bingo chips. And 5 six-sided dice. The game starts you out with the ship starting at Earth, the time track set at its maximum of 24 months, along with full stats showing the 4 isolationists on board, the captain's leadership level, the supply level, and all of your crew members start out at full effectiveness. The way the game works is each turn, you take 4 of those 5 dice, give them a roll, and then depending on what numbers came up, you have to decide which dice to play where on that readings board. For the direction reading, the die you place there will determine in what direction your ship will move that turn. So, for example, keeping in mind that this map is a triangular grid, if you were to place a 1 there, you could either move straight to the left or to the upper left. But if you were to place a 5 there, you can move either to the right or to the upper right. And the direction die does have a restriction in that you cannot place a die there that would cause the ship to move off of the map. The die that you place on the environment reading can have an effect both on the number of supplies that you carry through to the next turn and can also affect your crew's readiness levels. If you place a die showing a 1 or 2 on the environment reading, your supplies go down one for this turn. If you place a die that shows a 3 or 4, you can either do what's called a resupply on the fly, which means you don't pick up any extra supplies, but they don't go down this turn either. Or you can do what's called a full resupply and tick that supply counter up 2, but this causes that 24-month time counter to go down a month. And lastly, if you place a die showing a 5 or 6 here, this gives you the option of shore leave for this turn, which also causes you to lose time, but allows you to refresh your crew's effectiveness rating. And effectiveness can be kind of thought as sort of like fatigue. Every time a crew member works on one of the random events, their effectiveness goes down a notch. So shore leave gives you a chance to bump those back up again in exchange for a little bit of time. Next is the sabotage reading, and the die placed here will determine the kind of damage that the isolationists do this turn. If it's a die showing a 1 or 2, nothing happens. If that die is showing a 3 or 4, you lose supplies. And if it's showing a 5 or 6, you lose both supplies, along with time, and part of your leadership score. However, one of the tricky bits here is that if you play anything other than a 1 or 2 here, and all of the dies played add up to 15 or more, you've just captured one of the 4 isolationists. The STEC engine reading isn't used until later in the game, so I'll wait a little bit and go over that one a little bit later. But finally comes the die for the event reading. And depending on the number that you place here, a marker will move on the event board, which is set up as sort of an 8x3 grid. And each number placed will cause that marker to move a little bit differently on that grid. So just as an example, placing a 1 here would cause the marker to move 1 to the left and then 1 up. And if you happen to be on the edge of the board and need to move off, it simply wraps around to the other side of the board, both sideways and up and down. Then what happens once it's been determined which event you're going to have to deal with, each of these events presents a challenge that your crew members are going to have to overcome. And the events are pretty much half and half as far as events that will cause something good to happen to you if you manage to pass the challenge, and events that you have to pass in order to keep something bad from happening to you. Each event has a challenge rating of either 7 or 9, along with the skills that your 2 crew members have to have in order to be able to participate in that event. You always have to use 2 of your crew members, and both of them must have the 2 skills listed. So as an example, the event called Rogues has a challenge level of 7, and if the challenge is passed, your diplomacy score goes up a notch. The 2 skills needed to pass the Rogues challenge is a crew member who has a culture skill and another crew member who has a battle skill. Each crew member has a specific rating from 1 to 3 for each type of skill, and what you do is you take the 2 ratings for the 2 crew members that you chose, add their ratings together, and then roll a die, and those 2 ratings plus the die need to be at least the challenge rating or higher to pass that challenge. So, for example, for this Rogues challenge, I could pick Lieutenant Dav Shaniv, who has a plus 3 cultures skill rating, and Lieutenant Lexi Eldara, who has a plus 2 battles rating, giving me a total of 5, which means in order to pass that 7 skill check test, I need to roll at least a 2 on my die. And as it turns out, in my little test roll here, I didn't. I rolled a 1, which would mean we failed the challenge. Your diplomacy score would not go up, but both of those crew members still use up their effectiveness by 1 notch. A few examples of other stuff that can happen through these events is you can gain supplies, lose time, gain research points, lose leadership points, or in a few cases, you may have to place a marker on the sector you're in with a marker indicating that you've left a bad reputation in that area. So over the course of the game, you're trying to race against this 24-month clock in order to get across the map to find the source of the signal that was found 24 years earlier, possibly making a stop along the way at what's called a list point, which will help you in your search for the source of that signal once you reach the right spot, and then make your way back to Earth again after you've searched for the source, while at the same time eliminating the isolationist cell before you get back, without running out of supplies, without losing your leadership status, and without running out of time. If you do make it back to Earth on time, there are several conditions that must be met in order to be considered a winner. That being that you have to have searched at least one of those list points. You have to have found the region that the source is in and explored there. You have to have removed all of the isolationists on the ship. You have to have achieved at least one diplomatic success on your mission. And you have to have completed at least one research survey. The instructions also give you a number of scoring techniques that you can use if you'd like to keep score from game to game to try to do better each time. But aside from that, if you're back home and you've reached all of these goals, you win the game. So, what did I think of the Herald? To be honest, I'm still a little up in the air on this one. Part of that is because I've now actually played two different versions of the game. It was pointed out to me shortly after I recorded the first part of the podcast that I was actually playing an older edition. I had downloaded the game to my computer weeks ago, several weeks ago actually, and suddenly on a whim kind of just decided to print it out and try it out right off of the hard drive. But as it turns out, just a few weeks ago, version 2 of the game was posted and released, and I didn't know about it. So I've now tried both versions, and probably the biggest difference between version 1 and version 2 is how the event challenges are handled. In version 1, you would pick your two crew members, add together their skill levels for the two skills needed for the event, roll a die, and try to make sure that you get over that event's challenge level. In version 2 of the game, the way an event challenge works is that each event challenge has a difficulty rating of 1, 2, or 3 for each of the two skills needed, and then you have to decide how to split that up between the two crew members. So what it does is say, for example, the vibrations challenge shows 3 boxes, one of which is black and the other two are gray, and I personally had a little bit of trouble keeping track of how this worked, but what that means is the total number of boxes is the challenge rating or skill rating needed for one of the two skills needed, and then the gray boxes is the skill level needed for the other of the two skills. So for the vibrations challenge, one of your crew members would need at least a 3 skill level, either in biology or communications, you get to choose which one, and then the other skill or the other crew member needs at least a 2 skill level in the other skill. And as long as you have 2 crew members that meet those criteria and still have effectiveness points left, you automatically win the challenge. There's no die roll. A couple of the other little changes in version 2 include that isolating or eliminating an isolation cell now actually costs crew effectiveness, and the search for the source once you get to that location also costs crew effectiveness and is a little bit more difficult than it used to be. However, aside from those factors, the game plays pretty much the same either way. Now, I kind of like the mechanic where you have to roll the 4 dice and then decide where you want to apply each of those dice. It's not a completely new mechanic, but it seems to be used pretty well here. And my opinion on how the event challenges work is kind of split between the two versions. I have to say, I actually prefer the original version better. I personally liked that little bit of suspense of having to throw the die in order to check that you were actually able to beat the challenge. Because I figure even if you have an effective and skilled crew, if you're on an adventure into the unknown, there's still a chance that something's going to go wrong and you're going to fail. The auto-win mechanic for the skills check in the version 2 just kind of fell flat for me. It didn't feel as fun or as suspenseful or as interesting as it did in the first version. But at the same time, players who aren't as much into the randomness as I am and would rather have it be heavier to the strategic side rather than doing the die rolls, they might like version 2 better. So it's worth checking out both to see which one you prefer. Story-wise, I'm a bit of a sci-fi nerd, and I did have a few nits to pick about how the story went with the game. For example, it really bothered me as far as the reputation mechanic goes, where on your way to or from the source, you're actually meeting other civilizations along the way, and in some cases leaving a bad reputation there. And then, even though the whole purpose of the mission was to go out and find this new proof of other life in the universe that came from this signal source, when we leave a bad reputation ship, basically we actually find other life out there and then just tell them we're just passing through and keep moving on to find this source. And I had kind of the same gripes about some of the events where you're running across other spaceships or minefields or what have you, because I'm thinking, if this is humanity's first venture into the stars, who set the minefields? Who are in these other ships that we're battling? Also, according to the game's description, there aren't just four terrorists, but four terrorist cells represented on the ship, and I'm wondering where they're at. You have 8 crew members that are used for your events, and none of those go away when an isolationist is found and taken care of. So where are all these isolationists hiding on the ship? Are they janitors? Cafeteria crew? I did mention my gripe about the theming and storyline about the basically just passing through other civilizations to find out if the other civilization we heard from is actually there or not, and how I didn't think that made sense. And the designer expressed that the way he had envisioned it is that, yes, the main purpose of your mission was to go and find the source, but you are discovering other life along the way. But just because you're discovering other life along the way doesn't mean that you no longer have to worry about your original mission. You still need to go out there and find out what the source of that signal was. Admittedly, it's not that big of a deal, and I know that in a 2-page format like this, it's not like you're going to get a deep story going here. For something like that, even for not even that deep of a story, but just a story with at least some detail, you're probably going to need a solitaire game that has one of those paragraph books that you have to flip through. And that is definitely not the way that this designer was going with this game. So although that story aspect did bug me a little bit, I do have to give the game a pass for that. So with that aside, do I think you should check it out? Well, for a one-player game, this isn't bad. Just in general, the one-player games don't hold my attention for all that long. But still, I found the Herald to be an interesting distraction. If you're into solitaire games and the sci-fi theme, I think it's definitely worth checking out, though you may want to try out the low-ink versions of both version 1 and version 2 at first to see which one strikes your fancy a little better. Thanks for listening to the Printin' and Playin' podcast. I'd love to get your feedback, ideas, and suggestions for the podcast, so please feel free to share. Send me an email at printinpodcast@gmail.com, remembering that there's no G in the printin' in this case. Or if you're a BoardGameGeek.com member, you can send geek mail to me at my username ShadowGlare, which is Shadow and Glare together, but hold the W. Or leave a comment on the blog's webpage at printin-and-playin.podomatic.com.